Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. It's Matthew with you here. Just a very quick intro before we get to the main event this week. A great interview with the Real Brian of the Superb Profit Cast podcast. We're going to be chatting about monetization. Dirty word. But it shouldn't be really. I mean, you invest massive amounts of time and energy into producing your show, so surely you deserve to be financially rewarded for your efforts. That's why I asked Brian, who's emerged as a real authority in the field of podcast monetization over the past year, to come on the show so we can dive into this topic and throw some ideas around. Now, this isn't intended to be a how-to episode. There's no blueprints or right answers when it comes to making money with audio drama at the moment. The conversation's really intended to get you thinking about avenues you might be able to explore, ones that fit your show and fit your audience. Okay, so we're maybe still a long way off earning a living from our work, but we can surely at least be thinking about covering our hosting costs and maybe even have something left over to get ourselves a wee drink at the end of each month. I think you'll take a lot from what Brian has to say, and as always, we really do welcome your feedback at podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. By pure coincidence, there was a big discussion in our Facebook group last week about charging for your episodes. This wasn't actually something that came up in the chat with Brian, but I did write a blog post titled "Should I Charge for My Audio Dramas?" and you can find that at audiodramaproduction.com/blog. Just before we dive into the interview, I've got a wee bit of housekeeping to do. The interview's a biggie, so you won't hear from me after it's finished. I just wanted to say a huge thanks to everyone who's filled out our next 50 episodes survey. If you haven't taken the survey yet, please check out the show notes at audiodramaproduction.com and make sure you have your say on what you'd like to hear on the podcast in the future. Also, Patreon is something we'll be covering in the interview, and I just wanted to let you know that we've altered our own Patreon account from per episode donations to monthly donations, meaning you can now support the show for as little as $12 a year. I'd like to take this opportunity as well to thank Kessie, Karim, Umberto, Bob and Christian for your ongoing support in this area. We really do massively appreciate it. For more information on our Patreon campaign, head on over to audiodramaproduction.com/support. Right, that's enough from me, sort of. I mean, I'm in the interview, so you won't get rid of me that easily. Shall we?
Well, I'm the Real Brian, and I host ProfitCast, and then also it's not really a co-host thing, it's more of we're tri-hosting. We're trying to come up with different words like triumvirate, tri-hosting the Aero Squad podcast, but I'm one of three hosts on that one, and we recently just added our third host with that, which makes it more fun. So we have a good time with the three of us. I do that with Emily and Kevin, aka Miss Ice on the Podcast Overlord, and I go by The Shadow over on that show. And yeah, so I've got two podcasts right now, but I've been podcasting for about a little over 2 years now, but I've been behind the mic for more than 20 years in radio and other private events and online radio and podcasting and everything.
Brian, welcome to the show. Tricasting, I like that.
Oh, yeah, I think it's more fun that way.
Are you going to patent that or will I?
That's a good idea.
The Shadow, that's a name that I wager a few of our listeners are familiar with. What's that all about?
Oh, you know, so The Shadow for me is my first and favorite superhero out there. And that's because I was introduced to the world of superheroes, not through comics, if you can believe that, but through radio. And it was the original radio drama back in the 30s with Orson Welles. He had done, obviously, The Shadow and then War of the Worlds. And the first one I'd listened to was War of the Worlds. I had to do it for a school project when I was younger. And it was an idea of pick something. I don't even remember what the project was now, but I picked War of the Worlds and I had to go and listen to it. And then I had to analyze it. And it was so fascinating because, I don't know, you know, if you're familiar, I'm sure, with War of the Worlds, right,
Matthew? Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you know that when they first broadcast that, people were like committing suicide and freaking out because they thought there was a real alien attack.
Yeah.
And it was the first of its kind. And it's interesting kind of how that happened. And I remember hearing, you know, reruns of War of the Worlds, and all the new, you know, reruns basically said, this is just a radio drama. It's not a real story, you know, or a true story or something. And they had to do that because of the effect that it had. But then, you know, I was turned on to Orson Welles doing The Shadow, some of those radio dramas. And then we actually recreated a Shadow radio drama as part of one of our high school musicals. We did kind of a hodgepodge. But anyway, you know, that whole thing. And I loved The Shadow. I loved the character. And then, you know, that 90s movie with Alec Baldwin, you know, there was that. And it wasn't exactly the best recreation, but it was still a classic, you know. And so that's kind of how it all started for me. And I used it in gaming, and then I used it in radio and other things like that.
And you're doing the Arrow show as well, aren't you? The podcast just now. How's that been going?
That's been great. In fact, we started off as TV Talk Arrow when TV Talk was an organization, and that was for Arrow season 2. And we ran that, and then TV Talk shut down, unfortunately. But the guy that owned it gave us permission to take the show and all the rights to our show and rebrand it. And we rebranded it into Arrow Squad. And we just did that for season 3. Season 3 just wrapped up. And we're gearing up for season 4 of Arrow, but our third run, third year with Arrow Squad.
So our podcast, like, I mean, you do the Profit Cast now, and we're going to talk about that in a second. And we do the Audio Drama Production Podcast. We both started our shows in July of last year. Now, obviously, we've conquered the world. And
yeah, exactly.
we meet here to celebrate and to gloat. But ProfitCast, I discovered ProfitCast, like, I think it was just the tail end of last year. I think it was through Dave Jackson's show that I heard about you. So I've been listening ever since. Love the show.
Nice. Thank you.
And it's just, you know, initially, and I think you'll get this a lot, I thought, you know, it's called ProfitCast. It's about making money with your podcast. And, you know, it is. But a thing that you're always keen to point out is that it's not, you know, profit's not just about making money, is it? Profiting with your podcast and with your audience. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, that's kind of funny, because when I first started ProfitCast, the idea was, how do we grow an audience and how do we make money? And this was something that I was struggling with too, because at the time, this is ironic because this isn't even a year ago yet. At the time, there was nobody really teaching it. And now there's a bunch of people who are saying that they're teaching it. Although the reality is that there's still not a lot of people out there who really know how to profit with a podcast correctly. It's been interesting. I can tell you that. And I'm not like cutting anyone down in that sense. It's just that I think that there are a lot of people who have profited and don't really know how they got there. And I mean, shoot, I'm guilty with that with a business I had years ago. I was very successful and had no idea how I got successful until about 6 months ago. So even though the business is long gone, but with ProfitCast, like I said, the idea was to make money. And then as I was getting into it, I'm realizing that, you know, profiting, if you look at the definition of the word, it's more than just about money. It's about, you know, adding value, creating value for someone, making a difference. There's a couple of different definitions of it. And so I started to think, you know, money is important because you got to pay your bills. But what's more important is, are you profiting beyond the money, which is that whole idea of, are you making a difference? Are you impacting someone, encouraging someone, teaching someone, changing a life, whatever it is that your mission is? And I think most podcasters get into podcasting because of the passion. And yes, we want to make money, but what's the ultimate goal with your podcast? Is it just to make money, or is it to, like I said, have an impact?
So, I mean, like, you do a podcast, I suppose, and the world's your oyster. If you think it's hard to monetize a podcast, wait till you try and monetize an audio drama. That really is an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
But one of your sort of strong messages on the podcast is, before you even sort of consider monetization, you were talking about the strong need to build relationships and build a community. And that's really very important before you even think about money, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I guess there's a few ways to look at it from that sense, but you know, people talk a lot about sponsorships and advertising, and you really don't have to build relationships to do sponsorships and advertising. You just need sheer numbers. But is that the best way to do it? You know, I don't know. I think relationships and a community really are what's important when it comes to podcasting, because it's a very intimate medium. And, you know, people are listening to you with usually headphones, or maybe they're in the car, whatever the case is, you know, but I'm saying it's the idea that it's very personal, because it's usually one listener listening to you. It's not like you're in a, you know, a group of 400 people in an auditorium listening to you. So even though you may have thousands of listeners, each individual listener is really who you're talking to, because it's a very intimate medium. So I would say, yeah, building relationships and community is essential for most monetization streams, for sure.
What are some of the, it's worthy of an episode on its own, but what are some of the sort of key strategies, in your opinion, for building those communities and strengthening those relationships with your listeners?
You know, I've kind of talked about it, that there's really a few things that podcasters should have. And part of this is from my radio training. Part of this is from accidental discovery with actually emceeing private events and, you know, seeing people's reactions to what you have to say, which you, let me tell you what, if you really want to know how good you're doing, that's the best way to do it. Get up in front of people. They'll tell you immediately. But, and then of course with podcasting, what I found is this. One is, you, when it comes to your actual podcast topic and your content, I feel like it really needs to resonate with yourself. So like, you know, I talk about Arrow on Arrow Squad, and I love Arrow, right? So it's a topic that I have a passion for. And this is where my tagline comes in for ProfitCast, is that it's where passion meets profit. And the idea is that you have that passion for whatever you're talking about, and then it meets what other listeners want. And so I, you know, because if you're talking about something that's really fascinating to you, but nobody else cares, you're not going to have an audience, right? So the idea is that, you know, people want it. They've told you they love it. And you continue to do it in a way that resonates with yourself and also resonates with your listeners. So that's one thing. The second thing, and I've said, and especially even in radio drama, this is very important, is really the performance side of things. And I have to honestly say, and this is something that's been fascinating to me, is that it's understandable that many podcasters don't really know how to perform behind the mic, simply because podcasting is one of those things that it's easy to get into. And so you may never have had any kind of training for how to perform, how to talk behind the mic, how to engage your listener in a way that they're captivated. And that makes sense. But what blows my mind is how many podcasters don't care. And to be honest, I heard this recently, and it's like, I was listening to a speaker, and he said something about, if you can't keep me awake, you can't really do anything for me. You can't teach me anything. You can't keep me. Like, I'm gone. I'm moving on. And I thought, wow, that's really fascinating if you think about it that way. So keeping your listeners awake or engaged or captivated or whatever it is so important, because 93% of our communication is nonverbal. And so, you know, most of what they said is that it's really body language, but since we're speaking over audio, there is no body language. So if 93% of communication is nonverbal, then we've got to communicate it through our voices. And, you know, how excited we are, how passionate we are, how much we can keep the listener. And then the other 7% is the words. So that's another big thing that I talk about. With those two things in place, then it comes into, all right, let's build community. And if your community likes what you do and they like how you present it and you're keeping them engaged and awake, you know, that's when you have an opportunity to really start talking to your community, talking to your listener. Even if you have 1,000 listeners, it's still to your one listener, and asking questions. And, you know, if that person emails you or contacts you on social media or whatever, make sure to be in touch with them. Make sure to, you know, build a relationship with them and not just blow them off, or, you know, I'm too busy to email that person back or whatever. I mean, it really just comes down to friendship. Do you like friends? You know, do you like people? And if the answer is yes, then that's really, really all it is. It's just building friendships.
I think as well, like in the early days, you have to have a certain degree of patience, don't you? Because I remember when we started our, we did an audio drama called Aftermath, and it ran for two short seasons. And in the beginning, we were putting episodes out very sporadically, and sometimes you just wondered how, you know, you saw other audio dramas that had a very engaged listenership and active communities, and it was just that shock that we didn't suddenly, when we put one episode out, where was the community, you know, where was this ready-made community? But we just didn't understand that that actually takes quite a long time, and it's not so much looking at it as how many people I could get in. I think you touched on it. It's about that interaction with one listener at a time and just working your way, you know, getting to know people, and slowly but surely that community comes together, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because you talk about building a relationship with your community in a way that, you know, not about necessarily the numbers of listeners, but about the engagement and the quality of your relationships. And, you know, you could consider it kind of like a relationship, right? So like you go on a first date, you're not going to propose to that person, right? Because, I mean, some people do, but you know what I mean? Like it's not, you don't know the person well enough that it takes time to get to know them. You want to make sure that this is someone you like. And, you know, I know that a marriage is probably a little bit stronger of a you know, example than just a friendship. But the same thing applies, you know, you meet somebody for the first time, you're not best friends even. So it really does take some time to build up that trust and that likability kind of thing, and just enjoying being around each other and stuff like that. And in many ways, because you're talking to people through a microphone, they have to determine whether or not they enjoy being around you by listening.
Just looking ahead to sort of monetization or potential monetization strategies, we've, you know, you speak a lot on your show, and you've done some other interviews going through some of the options available to the podcasters. So I thought we could maybe just talk about some of these options, and then we could maybe try and relate it to how the listener might be able to adapt that for their audio drama podcast rather than a spoken word podcast. So we've already mentioned sponsorship. Do you want to tell me a wee bit more about, you know, sponsorship and podcasting and your friend, the CPM model, which you're, of course, a huge fan of, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, this has been kind of an interesting journey for me, and I certainly don't have all the answers yet, and I probably never will, but, you know, at least going to try to have as many as possible. I've been looking at sponsorships now for a while, and coming from radio, radio's built on advertising or sponsorships, which it really is the same thing. It's just companies usually use the term advertising and podcasters use the term sponsorship. So just so you know, it goes hand in hand. But, you know, because radio and TV are really built on advertising, that seems to be what everybody thinks podcasting should be built on, which is fine because in many ways, an advertiser or a company is going to pay you to basically podcast. And truthfully, how cool is that? Like, why wouldn't that be the greatest thing, right? You just get behind the mic, have fun, and get paid. The problem, which we're finding right now, and this is something that I'm really trying to change if I can with little power that I have. But the idea is that companies are looking at podcasting the same way that they did with radio. And radio has basically, you know, when they say they've got 20,000 listeners, it's usually a theoretical model based on a potential projection of the geographic population, basically. So, you know, in the States, we have a thing where, you know, you've got the census study. So they say, okay, in our area, you've got 160,000 residents. And, you know, because our radio tower is going to reach a certain area based on its range, 20,000 of those are in our demographic. So we've got 20,000, let's just say, males ages, 18 to 34. Let's just say that. So we have 20,000 potential listeners, and that's what they're going to go tell a company. Even though they may realistically only have 4,000, because if you do an 80-20 rule, 80% or, you know, 20% of the people actually listen to your station kind of thing, 80-20 seems to apply to so many things. You might have 4,000 actual listeners out of that 20,000 demographic. And so 4,000 listeners, but then you're going to say, all right, well, we've got a 24-hour radio station 7 days a week. When are we airing the commercial? Well, we're airing the commercial at 8 a.m. How many of those 4,000 listeners are going to be listening at 8 a.m.? So that's the problem with radio, is because, you know, the reality is you might have 100 people or a couple of hundred people that actually hear your advertisement. But the problem is that the companies are hearing 20,000 as the number. So when they come to podcasting, they're saying, hey, how come you don't have 20,000 listeners? When in podcasting, we put out a show, it's a captive audience. And I hate that term, but it is what it is, right? And you've got people who are listening. So if you have, let's say, 400 listeners, that's actually probably the same as radio. But they're not going to pay you as much because they're going to pay you on 400 listeners rather than 20,000 listeners that they're paying radio, even though the return's probably the exact same. So I hope that made sense. But the point of this is that this is why sponsorships and advertising right now is a problem with podcasting, is that you can get sponsorships, but companies are expecting you to have a lot of numbers. And many companies won't even look at you unless you have 20,000 to 80,000 downloads per episode, which is pretty much impossible for most people. In fact, I think it's less than 1% of podcasters even have those numbers. So it's pretty much impossible. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to educate these companies to say, you are paying for value, not listenership. Because the CPM model, as you mentioned, is what they call cost per mille, which is cost per thousand listeners. So they may pay you, let's say, $25 per thousand listeners, which, like I said, worked with radio because it's a, you know, it's an up in the air kind of gamble. Whereas if you actually have 1,000 listeners listening to your podcast, that's a really great return. So what I'd like to see, and this is the challenge I have for, let's just say, anyone. And so if you can do this, I can't wait to hear your story. This is my challenge. I'm going to be challenging this with myself as well, is going to different companies that are relevant to our podcast topics. And make sure they're relevant. That's the key, right? So whether it's a product or a service, go to them and say, here's what I'm doing. Here's my podcast. Here's the engagement I have with my listeners. Don't tell them your numbers. Just give them the engagement and say, you know, I would really love it if you would sponsor this show because you know, your product, your service is relevant. And also it would show that you as a company support this community, this niche of topic and, you know, kind of go from there. I've heard there are some people doing this, and I'd like to interview them on ProfitCast, but I really like the idea of a flat rate sponsorship that podcasters can get for their shows and say, this is a support. So maybe saying $200 per episode, if that makes sense, regardless of the numbers you have.
One of the, arguably the biggest audio drama in the world right now, We're Alive. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a zombie story set in Los Angeles. You'll need to check it out. You probably like it. But they used sponsors for their free content. And we'll get to free content and premium content a bit further down the list. But they were using sponsors. And the funny thing was, a lot of these sponsors didn't relate to, you know, it was a post-apocalyptic story. Off the top of my head, it was a few years ago I heard the first series, but they had like a... I think it was an aquarium, a shop like that sold fish tanks and stuff. nothing to do with zombies whatsoever. Yeah. But it was quite funny that because I would always think now, and I mean, it must have worked for them back then, but I was sort of brainstorming as to if an audio drama producer wanted a sponsor for their show, they'd probably want that sponsor to, like you say, fit in with maybe their story. So I was thinking along the lines that, you know, I don't know if you could get like online comic stores or even going down the path of finding something that fits the genre of your story, a company like that trying to sponsor the show. That probably is the best way to go, isn't it? Because you've got that kind of niche instead of just, you know, I'm not saying We're Alive, we're all over the place. It worked for them. It was just maybe something that they'd sort of pulled together in their early days. Further down the line, they did end up having a lot of trailers for other audio dramas who were probably paying them. So once you get to a certain size, I suppose you have a bit more clout for approaching people, don't you?
Well, and that's, yes, you do, but I don't feel like that's the right way to do it. Because just like you said there, is that it, you know, an aquarium is advertising on a zombie apocalypse show. And it's like, it has nothing to do with each other, right? And so I think that's the, and interestingly enough, I have actually had conversations with different companies that are, I'd call them mid-sized companies. You know, they're not large companies by any means. And these mid-sized companies are the ones saying, we want to see 20 to 80,000 downloads an episode. And yet when I ask them, okay, well, who did you advertise with and what was your result? And almost every one of them are like, well, the results weren't that good. Because like you just said, their product was not relevant to the podcast they advertised on. The only reason they advertised on it was because of sheer numbers. So of course their return wasn't good. So they wasted a lot of money on this podcast that their listeners could have cared less about their product. So I really agree with what you're saying there, is that it's important for us, you know, for example, if you've got a zombie apocalypse podcast, then go after those companies out there that feature that kind of stuff. I mean, there's even video games out there for zombie stuff that you could go to those companies and say, hey, I've got something that my listeners might actually like your game. So come advertise with me, that kind of thing. So anything that has relevance, I think, is going to make much more of an impact and a return for that company, regardless of the numbers you have. At least that's the theory. We have to put it into practice and see.
So just to wrap up sponsorship then, for those listening who are maybe interested in looking into getting a sponsor, is it just a case of firing off a few emails? Is there a set in stone tactic that works when approaching companies?
You know, the tactic that I like to take personally, and it seems to be working so far, and I think it actually may, it depends on the companies, first of all. You go to big companies and they're probably not even going to respond to you, and that's okay. You can hound them for a little while and that might be a good thing, but some companies will get back to you. Go to the smaller companies first and practice with them. Again, something that's relevant. An email is a great way to start, and then try to set up a phone conversation or a Skype conversation. And the tactic I like to take is ask them questions first. Don't tell them about you. Find out what it is that company wants in a podcast. Find out what other podcasts that they've worked with. Find out what's worked for them, what didn't work for them. And just basically ask them as many questions as possible, because let them talk. Then you're going to get all the information and research you need. And then when they come back to you and say, okay, well, what's your podcast about? What can you offer us? That's when you can jump into that conversation with them. But to me, that seems like the best tactic, because otherwise I don't even think they're going to listen to you.
Great stuff, Brian. Let's talk about the Humble ebook, because this is a thing that many, many podcasts, yourself included, we have an ebook. It's called How to Create Audio Drama. It's available on Amazon.co.uk. No, I'm only kidding. We do have an ebook though. But if you relate this to audio drama, podcasting, yeah, a podcaster can create an ebook about their topic. If it was an audio drama, if it's a work of fiction, I suppose you could look at doing maybe some short stories from your story world, or maybe even like a show Bible or something like that. And I bet people's audiences would really like that sort of content, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I would agree with that. If you like to write, yes. Or if you have a great dictation program that, you know, you can speak it and then it translates it into words. So either way, as long as you are okay with the writing side of things, I think it's a great idea.
I had down here create a product, because in podcasting, you know, a lot of podcasts now, they almost exist around a product or a service, don't they? So people are offering something and the podcast is there to get the word out about that.
Yeah. You know, one thing I would caution, first of all, is you do see podcasters who launch a podcast and, you know, less than a month later, they've got a product out, and it could be a thing where maybe this company's been around for years and it's a product they've already been working on and they just launched it at about the same time they launched their new podcast, which is fine. That's not a problem. But if you've got somebody who's new to whatever space you're in and you're launching a product within a month, it's kind of like, wait, how do you know anything about this? You know? So I think the caution is, which goes back to the building of the community, you don't want to upset the balance between the community building that you're trying to do and the fact that, hey, I've got something to sell here. You don't want your listeners to think like you're just in it for the money, or you're just in it to sell something. So caution on the timing. I don't think there's any necessarily right or wrong timing. I think it really comes down to launch a product when you know it's right, when the community knows it's right. And you kind of have to fill out your community on that one. But so with that, you know, you were asking about different products and stuff. Successful products, you know, there's different kinds of, I mean, you've got information products, which seems to be very, very popular. And I'm wondering even if it's becoming a little saturated, like everybody's becoming an expert kind of thing. But, you know, that's an easy way to do it. You know something that other people don't know, put it together in an ebook or a training video or maybe even a training audio, and basically spend some time on it. Work it out so that you're actually giving value to your listener about something that can help them with whatever it is you're teaching or you're going to coach someone with. And then you just put it together and you sell it. That's a very easy way to, well, I wouldn't say it's easy. It's simple. It takes work. It's a simple way to basically get a product out there. It doesn't really cost you much of anything just because it's basically your time and your knowledge rather than you having to go out and actually create something with raw materials. So it's a very cost-effective way to get something out there and start building some expertise and reputation and sell some stuff. And then there's the actual physical product, which I think is a little more difficult. It really comes down to what do you have to offer? There are, my gosh, you know, do you ever watch the show Shark Tank?
No.
Oh, that's a fascinating show, but it's basically where people can come and pitch their businesses to five investors. And I watch it all the time because it's just, it's interesting to see what people come up with. And so they're coming up with, it usually is a lot of product-based companies. And you see these products and some are, yeah, that's kind of a copy off of something else, nothing new. And then you see something where you're like, oh my gosh, how did they come up with that? So products are difficult because then there's patent issues and you got to be different, you know, as far as actual physical products. So I'm not sure I recommend that unless you're really good at that already. But, and then there's services too. You can offer services, which I kind of lump in with products as well, if you're good at something. I will say this, and this may kind of upset our conversation here, but most of the information products are all centered around teaching and usually involve something to do with business. So I did get an interesting email recently, and I'm actually talking about it on this week's ProfitCast, but it's the idea of, well, I have an entertainment podcast and I don't teach. I don't want to teach. And it feels like that I'm a restaurant owner learning how to create a law firm, which makes no sense, right?
Yeah.
That's the point. So the idea is that, well, if I'm an entertainment podcast, which I consider radio drama to be under the entertainment category rather than a educational, most likely, well, why would you want to teach?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's the big challenge, because the example that's out there for information products is all centered around teaching and education. So for entertainment, what do we do? And that is actually a great question.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that because you took the words out of my mouth. You know, a lot of people are trying to entertain rather than to teach or to coach.
Yeah.
And it seems unfair that there might not be at a glance that monetization opportunity for them to at least get something back for all the time and energy that they're putting into creating value for people by entertaining them. So, I mean, I suppose you could look at physical products in two ways. You've got the type of product like a cup or a t-shirt, you know, that is being made by someone else but will be tailored or customized. T-shirts and cups, as an example, you know, you go through like cafe press and that, and you maybe sell one for $20 and you make 10 cents on it because they take their hefty commission. So really isn't, it's almost not even worth a doing, is it? But I suppose if you're creating if you create a story world, if you create a piece of fiction that people are immersed in, that story world does not have to be limited to one medium.
Yeah.
And if you make the contacts and the relationships out there, say you have a science fiction audio drama, an independent games company might be interested in working with you to produce a game version of it. Animators might be interested in animating it. Independent filmmakers, and then you look at products as well that you might physically, you might be quite a gifted person with your hands. You might be able to build things and create models or miniatures and sell those. You might be artistic. You could sell posters for your show. So I suppose with a bit of creativity, you could come up with things that that if your listeners enjoy your show enough, they might be willing to pay for.
You know, Matthew, I think you've hit it really well. And I think that's actually the issue with podcasting right now, not just in audio drama, but in general, like with podcasters, is that because podcasting is still a relatively new medium, being that it's, you know, about 10 years old, there is a lot of question as to what do we do. And, you know, I think there's proven models all over the place in other industries. But when it comes to podcasting, it's like, we still don't know really the best ways to monetize. And, you know, in my research and interviewing people and finding out what are the best ways to monetize, I've actually been told by many podcasters that entertainment podcasts can never monetize. And I strongly disagree with that, because the entertainment industry is so, so ridiculously rich because people buy entertainment. I think they buy entertainment far more than they buy education. The problem is it's harder to sell entertainment than it is education. And so I think what you guys have an opportunity to do as audio drama is you have an opportunity to do exactly what you said there, where depending on what kind of talents you have, if you're great with building something, then build something. Build something that actually relates to your podcast, prototype it, and find a way to sell it. I mean, I don't even know what I'm not good with my hands like that. So that's, I don't even know where to start there. But, you know, for example, I play piano, I'm a composer. Maybe I could be doing soundtracks for podcasts. You know what I mean? For example, or if you've got, like you said, the artistic talent, I do know that there is a successful podcaster who draws art and he makes most of his money through art, actually, even though it's related to his podcasts. So there's a lot of options to put products out there that relate to your podcast. And very likely, we probably have some kind of a talent. And especially if you're in the entertainment side of things, you know, your product isn't limited to information or a book or, you know, whatever. Your product could be anything. Like you said, it could be a mug, but it's a mug you create because you're good at pottery. Or you roast coffee, so you create a special coffee for your podcast that you sell. You roast and you sell it to your listeners and they get fresh coffee. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think outside the box here.
I suppose, like, in a sense, you know, if you're doing an audio drama or an entertainment show, you genuinely just want to do it. It's your hobby. I dare say there's somebody out there who creates an educational tutorial as a hobby. There might be someone that does that, but generally someone sits down to create something like this with a view to making money. Even if they're giving it away for free, it's going to be rammed with affiliate links and, you know, it's going to be a bit of a lead magnet. But I think, like, when you put together an audio drama, when you draw a piece of artwork, when you do a wood carving or whatever, those are things people do just because they like to do it. And I suppose it's always easy to say, no, you know, I don't want money for it. I just like to do it. And there still is that stigma about money and about, you know, being rewarded for your work. And that murky feeling you get if you maybe have to ask, not have to ask for money, but, you know, if you want to maybe try and make some money back. And it's, I suppose it's still something as a community that we're trying to get around, isn't it? Not just in audio drama, but in podcasting as well.
You're right, because there are people out there who are very strongly saying that making money with podcasting is almost evil. I mean, it's true. There are people out there who are like, no, you shouldn't be trying to make money. And so then, yeah, you feel guilty asking for it, or you feel guilty saying, well, you know, I need to get a sponsorship, or I want to sell a product just so that I can keep this thing alive. Although my thought on this is this, that podcasting isn't cheap. It's not truthfully that expensive either, but it isn't cheap, right? So it is nice to be able to cover your expenses. And for some people, you know, you want to make this a full-time living, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I think it really comes down to that, you know, money has a stigma. If you're in it for the money, I can see that being something that people might not like. But if you're saying, I'm in it because I have a passion for this and I love it, but money is a factor, unfortunately, it is what it is. You can't pay the bills with passion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there's a factor to say it's okay to make money. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, where's your intention? Where's your focus? I think is really what the issue is. So, you know, my encouragement would be, if you need to make money, it's okay. Be okay with it. Be confident. Don't be afraid to ask for it. Don't be afraid to go out there and do something about it.
one of the things I briefly mentioned there was affiliate income. And I was having to think to myself, like, affiliate income and audio drama. What do you think of, like, product placement? Like, this would never happen, but, you know, like a Wayne's World style sketch where he's got the Nike tracksuit and the tin of Diet Pepsi. I wonder if you could get any of that into an audio drama and then have an affiliate link in the show notes.
You know, that's not a bad idea. I think, you know, with a product placement, the thing about affiliates is you can do whatever you want for that company. So, like, if you're an affiliate for, you know, Pepsi or Coke or whatever, they don't care what you do as long as you're getting them business. Really. I think so Pat Flynn, in my opinion, is still the best example of affiliate income. And if you've never heard of Pat Flynn, go check it out at Smart Passive Income. But he has mastered the art of affiliates. And the thing that I've seen about it is that he basically goes, and he, first of all, like with Bluehost, which is a hosting service, he says, I'm going to create a free video that's going to show you how to put together a WordPress site in less than 4 minutes if you sign up with Bluehost. So it's a free video, which everybody wants free. And you watch this video, you get a total instruction on how to do this, and then you click on his affiliate link. That's it. It's no extra cost to the, you know, to the listener. Basically, it's a win-win for everyone. That's the beauty of affiliate. But the thing where people, I think, fail is that they don't have something like Pat has with that free video. And two, people affiliate things that have absolutely no relevance to their podcast. So people are listening to, you know, an audio drama podcast and they're affiliating, I don't know, whatever. I mean, I have no idea actually, but something that makes no sense, right? So I think if you can find companies, like, for example, this is a company that, two companies we're going after with Arrow Squad. One is, by the way, if you're not familiar with Arrow or Arrow Squad, it is a superhero show. So we're going after two companies called Superhero Stuff and Ripped Apparel, which basically Ripped Apparel does t-shirt designs, and they're good for 24 hours. After the 24 hours, the t-shirt designs go away. You can't ever get that t-shirt again. So it's unique, but a lot of times these artists are doing superhero t-shirts. So being an affiliate for these companies, you get a percentage of the sale that they make, but your success really comes down to how well you can draw your listener into wanting to go and purchase this product or this service. It's really what it comes down to. But I think affiliates are brilliant. And in my opinion, probably the fastest income.
One way that might work for the listener in their audio drama show, say for example, like, say I was doing a Western, like a cowboy style audio drama.
Yeah.
I could like have a wee clip of me speaking at the end of the show saying, if you like the show, check out the show notes to this episode, and then have some affiliate links of some of the books that I've read in the same genre as the story that maybe inspired me. You know, these are some of the books I've read, some of the films I've watched that helped bring about the idea for this story, and I think you might like them too. And through that, you'd then be directing people that you know like this genre of fiction to all these opportunities to consume more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think, again, that comes back to the idea of, you know, viral sharing. So, for example, and I don't know any Western books off the top of my head, but yeah, if you were to say, I've got this Western drama. Well, let me do this. I'm gonna go over to a sci-fi thing. So if I were to do a sci-fi, and I haven't read the book yet, but if I were to do a sci-fi audio drama, and I could say, okay, this episode or this series, maybe this whatever series I've been doing on, really, I was inspired by the book The Martian by Andy Weir, or Weir, I guess is how it's pronounced. So I think about that and I think, hey, you know, this, I'm telling people about, this is the book that inspired what I did. And, you know, here you go. So interestingly enough, that book's been getting a lot of viral sharing because people say, hey, this is a great book. Go check it out. So if you were an affiliate for him, or you were an affiliate for, you know, Amazon or Audible or something like that, where people could go and download, but you're sending people to that link. And like you said, you have the link in the show notes and everything. Yeah. I mean, that's going to draw people, and you could potentially make a significant amount of money doing that just due to sheer numbers. But again, I mean, it's hard to say because it depends on the commission. You know, if you're getting a 6% commission per sale, then that's going to take a lot of sales, right?
Yeah.
So it just depends.
I suppose, like, going on your sci-fi example, you know, say you had a 1 minute clip at the end of each episode, and it was just your sci-fi book of, say, the week. Not many people get an audio drama out every week, but per episode, you had a clip saying, you know, this episode I really recommend. And it's just sci-fi books that you loved, or even sci-fi films that you loved. And, you know, say you have 500 listeners, if a couple of them check it out and buy it, you know, it's not doing you any harm, is it, for a one-minute clip at the end of your show. So it's certainly an option for the listener.
I agree with you. And I think that, you know, if you're saying here's some sci-fi books I love, people will potentially go check it out and maybe they'll say, okay, but really people love recommendations. So, you know, for example, and this is a little bit better of an example, I think, but, you know, when I was younger, we put together this game, this role-playing style game that we built up, and which kind of goes along with the audio drama stuff, because we wanted to turn it into something where it would either become an audio drama or even an actual TV series. We haven't done that yet. But anyway, the point is that it was really, really, really detailed, but it was inspired from Robert Heinlein's Starship Troopers. Not the movie, but the actual book that was written back in the 60s. And when we tell people that, they're like, oh, I've never read that. I should go check that book out. And say, yeah, it's very interesting. It's, you know, fascinating book. Let's put it that way. But that's usually kind of what people will eventually go check out, is saying, here's a specific title and here's how it related to me and here's how it now relates to you. This is why you should check this out. And chances are people are actually going to take action on something like that rather than saying, you know, here's 10 sci-fi books that I like, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've just pulled them out of a hat.
Yeah, exactly. Even though I like them all.
Yeah, that more suggests that the creator is just more interested in bringing in money rather than, you know, a genuine interest for a book that they love, that they really do think that their audience would like as well. And, you know,
exactly,
like you say, the going through an affiliate link and buying doesn't cost anyone anymore. A lot of people are always looking for books as well. So it's a win-win, as you said yourself. The next wee thing I've got on my list here was premium content. There's a show, an audio drama show called The Leviathan Chronicles, which is a really excellent show. And they had quite a clever setup. I'm not sure if they're still doing it now, but what they did was the main body of the story, which was on a very consistent release schedule and big episodes, highly produced with great actors. They had their main story was free and it was podcasted, but they also took some of the characters and gave them their own sort of side stories, and they sold those episodes as premium content, I think for maybe like £2 or £3 each. And I think they had a substantial listenership, so that probably, I'm not sure if it would have made them money considering how much they were probably paying out to create this thing, but at least they were probably recouping some of it. So that's an option as well, isn't it? To create that premium content on the side for some of your more fanatical listeners to consume.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Premium content it's not being done that much, interestingly enough. And actually, there is a podcast that I know of, and I intend to interview them on ProfitCast just to find out specifically what they've done. But they've got a thing where well, these guys are a little bit different, but I like the idea where here's the main story content that's free, and then anything additional, any backstories, side stories, you know, that's behind a paywall, whether it's, like you said, £2 to £3, or maybe it's so much per month. Like, it's a monthly subscription, and we're always putting out new content, so your monthly subscription gives you access to your entire back catalog, as well as anything new that you put out as far as the side stories. This other podcast that I'm hoping to interview is they've got their latest episodes, and I think it's like their latest 10 episodes maybe. And then if people come in and say, hey, I just discovered you, where are your old episodes? Oh, well, you know, it's $30 a month and you can get all of the old episodes, but also you get access to additional podcasts that our team puts on that you cannot get for free anywhere else. And I think that's an interesting model. So maybe you start a second podcast, if you have the time, of course, that is only available behind a subscription in addition to some of the additional content that you're putting out. So there are ways. And I think the negative on this is that podcasting is basically advertised as free. And because of that, people, I think, have a hard time pulling out money to pay for a podcast, even if it is special content. But if you're doing something above and beyond what a normal podcast would be, then I don't think there's anything wrong with charging for it. And it, again, this goes back to the building of community. If your community likes it enough, they'll pay for it.
Just getting a wee idea of what you're talking about there with the back episodes. It's hardly reinventing the wheel, but you could maybe say you had like 6 to 8 hours of audio drama content, maybe in your previous series. You could batch those together and just put it on Audible as a, like an audiobook. I mean, it would be an audio drama, but get it on there. I suppose if you did that, you might have to remove them from your feed, or maybe you would have dedicated enough listeners that they would just want to buy that. Maybe you could release it in a higher bit rate, or maybe you've got adverts in your free ones and you would take them out. So I suppose there's all sorts of options there, isn't there?
Yeah. You know, that's a great point you just brought up with advertising that is in the free stuff. And then for paid content, it gets removed. And that's, I'm looking at are you familiar with Spotify?
Yeah.
Okay. I figured you guys all knew about that. I didn't know which countries it's in, actually. But that's a model they do, is if you get the free Spotify, there's advertising everywhere. And, you know, you can listen to 2 songs and then it breaks in with a couple of advertisements and then you can listen to the next. But if you pay for the premium, then, you know, it removes all the ads. So that is a great model where you're giving people free options, but they have to listen to advertisements. And then the paid option is no ads. And then the other thing that you mentioned was going back to like behind a subscription or a pay thing. Even what if you were to do something like, I mean, let's say you've got a lot of episodes. What if you were to do a review episode or like a catch-up episode? So if you're just joining us for the first time, you know, we've got a $5 or a $10. Sorry, I don't know what the translation is into pounds. My apologies. Anyway, but whatever it is out there, you know, you've got an option that they pay for that is a, let's just say a 1 hour audio recording of you catching people up.
Yeah.
You know, that way they don't have to go back and listen to 100 episodes if they don't want to. Maybe they just want to jump in on the you know, the new stories and that's it. So you're selling people on convenience.
Another one of your favorites, Brian, the Patreon model, which is a fairly recent thing, and crowdfunding and things like that. And, you know, I speak about this a lot on the show, but we've got a bit of an issue in audio drama. It's still a small community. And when there's a Kickstarter project on the go, we basically pass a £10 note back and forward to each other.
Yeah.
So really it's about, and you know, we'll go to Patreon in a second, but with a Kickstarter, I've been trying to figure this one out, and I think it's basically just if each producer tries to win new people, you know, new listeners into audio drama, people that aren't already in audio drama, that's essentially going to bring, you know, more ears, more wallets into the medium, because before then, it's just like a group of producers all supporting each other, but we're not really getting forward because it's a finite amount of money in the pot. So I suppose the bigger picture is just go out there and try and get new listeners into the medium, try and get them involved in your show, try and get them involved in other shows. That's my view on sort of crowdfunding and Kickstarter and things like that. I don't know if you've anything to add to that before we discuss Patreon.
Well, I'll add one thing that kind of goes along. Well, I mean, it does go along with this, but it's something that I've seen in general too with, but this goes with not just with Kickstarter crowdfunding, but also growing listenership. Most podcasters tend to stick within their own sphere of influence, just like you said about getting out and getting new listeners. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes podcasters make, is they just go to the same old people. So, you know, if you've got an audio drama, you've got to go out to different groups of people all over the place. So if you guys are passing the same amount of money back and forth, it's like, all right, you need to expand your audience into areas. I mean, shoot, maybe you go to engineers because they just might happen to like audio drama, you know? Maybe they're doing lines of code every day and they want something to listen to while they're doing this. You know, you never know, but I think audio drama really has a potential to reach so many different people because, hey, who doesn't like a good story? So yeah, getting outside of the typical community that we all have. And as an example with ProfitCast, I'm targeting podcasters because I'm trying to help podcasters to grow and monetize. But what even I found is that I've kind of capped out in the standard podcast community. It's kind of like we all share the same listeners. Yeah, I started to realize.
Yeah.
Even though there are millions and millions, well, billions of people out there, but millions of people that are thinking about podcasting. Well, I've got millions of potential listeners and I haven't reached them because I'm only reaching those that are in that same bubble. So that's where I think we need to kind of look. We need to get out of our box a little bit and think a little creatively, like, okay, who could be an audio drama listener? Who could be a potential podcaster that might enjoy this show? That kind of thing. And get out there and just start letting others know about it. And yes, that will eventually help with the crowdfunding side of things too. Kickstarter, I'm not too terribly familiar with. I know what it is and how it works, but I've never used it. So I can't give you much more on that, unfortunately.
So we are both on Patreon, aren't we? I mean, yes. you set yours up quite recently, and I think it's going quite well. Just in case the listener's not familiar with Patreon, it's like an ongoing crowdfunder, isn't it? You could get pledges per episode or per month, I think it is that you were doing.
I'm doing per month, yes.
And, you know, how have you found that, just for the benefit of the listener? How's it been going since you got it set up?
Interestingly enough, I set up Aero Squad on Patreon and ProfitCast on Patreon at about the same time. And ProfitCast was a little bit more of an experiment. I was using ProfitCast as basically the learning platform. And I was using Aero Squad as the, we should be able to monetize this no problem. And I was talking to some other people who have done extremely well with Patreon. And they were kind of giving me some coaching on, okay, here's what you got to do in here. And, you know, you've got a great setup for this. You guys should be able to make $1,500 to $2,000 a month doing this kind of stuff, minimum. And we launched Aero Squad and nothing. And I'm going, okay. And it slowly trickled in. To be completely honest, with the amount of engagement we have with Aero Squad and with the listeners we have, the amount of listeners, I'm absolutely baffled as to why it's not doing better. And I'm still in the discovery process to figure this one out, because I know I'm not alone with this. And again, this is why I do ProfitCast, is that I'm the guinea pig. You know, I'm the guy who's trying to figure out what works and what doesn't and why it doesn't work or why it works. ProfitCast, on the other hand, was more of a, I'm throwing this up as an experiment, and that took off. I was like, okay. So it is bizarre to me. And truthfully, I don't know why ProfitCast has done better than Aero Squad. The only thing I can think of is that the nature of ProfitCast is experimentation, and people want to learn something. I did not. Okay, I'll say this, and maybe this relates, but I was talking with someone recently who said that when it comes to a crowdfunding or a donation model, people don't pay for opinions alone. They pay for value given as well. So I know ProfitCast is value and opinions. Aero Squad, on the other hand, is primarily just opinions. So that could be a major factor. You know, we're not comic book experts on that show, and that could be a major factor as to why people don't support us as much. So if I were to go out there and read all the comics about Green Arrow and all the associated, you know, universes and become an expert and start offering my comic backstory expertise, that could change the game. So I wish I had an answer for you, but, you know, that's just me being honest, saying that I'm actually trying to figure this out, because there are guys out there who are making $5,000 to $10,000 a month with Patreon, and others who are doing the exact same strategies, who have great podcasts and a lot to offer, who are making $50 a month or less. And I don't know why. I'm still trying to figure it out, but I will figure it out. That's the thing. So I know it does have to do with community. It does have to do with value given. And yeah, it's crazy. So how about you, though? Are you doing okay with it?
Yeah, we've got, we call our pledgers the Knights of the Pledge. We've got five. Nice. Cool. Which is really good. It's a lot more than I ever would have. You know, I was surprised when we got one, but we've got five people now. So, you know, very, very grateful to them. And it's helping to pay the hosting costs. That's the thing.
Nice.
Just if you can get, you know, if you could get your podcast to just break even, I think you're making huge strides. So we really appreciate that support. And it's a great model. I hadn't heard of it until very, very recently. I think, again, the tail end of last year, I first heard about it and I looked into it and got signed up. And yeah, I think it's a great idea. And for audio drama as well, you know, if people are doing a show, they'll have a lot of very engaged listeners that love the story and would probably be willing to chuck a small amount of change in the hat each month and just help support the creator.
I think you guys, I mean, really, I think Patreon is a wonderful option that everyone, every podcaster should at least put up. Make sure to do it right, though. But if you can put it up, you know, you never know what's going to come in. And I think that's the thing, is that if you're asking people to support you and say, hey, I do this for free, I love doing this, but we got to cover our costs, can you help? And you have to be willing to ask. That's the thing. Like, you have to actually say, will you please support my podcast because I need to cover my costs so that I can continue to do this.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say, sure, of course I will. You know, and then others, you know, they don't or they can't. And the one thing I like about Patreon too is you can sponsor someone for $1 a month. So, I mean, well, again, I don't know what the translation is, but, you know, for in the States, it's like $12 a year for most people is really nothing. Now, for some it is, and I get that, but for most people, it's really not an issue. So to be able to offer that is, why not? This is great. But I think it's really, because even if, like you just said, even if it just covers your costs, that's a huge issue because that allows you to podcast without spending money.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, once your podcast host fees are covered, then you can look at, you know, you're spending money every month on something like Adobe Creative Cloud, you're paying for your Dropbox. There's all these other costs, you know, your website. If you've got an email list, and we'll get to that in a second, you're going to need a physical postal address. That costs you money every year.
It adds up.
So, when you write it all down, you know, you're thinking, I'm going to need maybe £400 a year to break even. So Patreon's a great way of doing that. And we don't mention it a lot on the podcast. I bet the listeners laughing at themselves and disagreeing. But the way I kind of said to the listener was, look, if you listen to us every single week and you enjoy the show, do you think it would be worth buying us a coffee every month? You know, would you be willing to do that? And when you put it like that, it's not too much money. So, and again, that applies to the listener in their own show. You know, just like you say, you've got to ask, don't you? Ultimately, there's no point in creating a Patreon and not telling anyone.
Exactly. And, you know, I will say this, that, you know, if your listeners know that you're doing this because you love it and you actually do want to add value to them, whether you're entertaining or educating or whatever, then, you know, there's no reason to say, hey, this is what it costs me. Would you please help? You know, and again, if somebody doesn't want to help, that's okay. That's not a problem. And you don't want to hold it against them. In fact, you just want to say, hey, it's okay if you don't help. Really, you're still just as valued, but if you can and you are willing, would you please? And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think what people don't sometimes understand is the amount of time and effort that goes into podcasting. And even though we love it, it, you know, the time flies, it's great. But the amount of time I put into ProfitCast on a weekly basis and the amount of time we put into Aero Squad, we should be getting paid to do this full time because it's that much time. And as much as we love doing it, you know, even I've come to a point where it's like, I will continue to do podcasting because getting behind the mic is my passion. But there comes a point where it's like, I have to bring money in so that I can afford to continue to do it. It's not even a matter of desire as much as it's just about being, you know, smart and responsible. So there's nothing wrong with asking for it. And I guess I want to encourage more and more, please ask your listeners for it. And listeners, consider giving. That's what I say. Now, if you want to know more about kind of how to set your Patreon up, I interviewed a guy on ProfitCast. It was episode 36. And he had great tips on really how to set your Patreon campaign up, how to do milestones in a manner that's going to be relevant, how to set up rewards correctly, everything. So it's a great, great interview, great episode. And the guy's bringing in about $5,000 a month, I think.
That's not a bad return. I remember that episode. It's really good. And I will definitely put that in the show notes as well.
Excellent.
Brian, it's been a really great chat.
Just to
sort of wrap things up, like where could the listener find you online? What are you up to at the moment? What should they be keeping an eye out for in the near future?
Well, right now, Profit Cast is the main podcast that I'm doing, along with Aero Squad. And Profit Cast is at ProfitCastUniverse.com. And Profit, by the way, just so you know, it's Profit, just to clarify that. And then Aero Squad is over at AeroSquad.com. And yeah, you know, I'm working on a continuing, obviously, do Profit Cast stuff, but I am in the process of putting out some tutorials and, you know, just a couple of video trainings and stuff like that, because I do get a lot of people who ask a lot of questions, and I'm going, you know, I offer coaching and consulting services, but I understand that, you know, sometimes that's out of someone's price range, or they may not need that level of in-depth, you know, conversation. They just may want to say, hey, just send me a video and I'll watch it and I'll learn, you know, kind of a do-it-yourself kind of thing. So I'm kind of working on that stuff, but yeah, I do meet with people here and there, and going back to that, the thing you talked about, I'm actually trying to offer some services where I can actually co-host people's shows who I'm actually working with my physical therapist right now. You probably heard in my episode that I had a back surgery go wrong and then I got hit by a car on my bike. So you probably heard all that.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
Yeah. So, you know, getting physical therapy is a good thing, but it's getting better. I'm getting stronger. But anyway, so obviously he and I built a great friendship. And he's been talking about podcasting, and I finally said, you know, well, because he's saying we want to start a podcast, but we don't know how to do it. And that's kind of where I really start to, I got to see firsthand, which goes back to your conversation, where there are business people out there who want a podcast, but they're just too busy to learn how to do it, take it on. And they're actually looking for people who have the talent and the ability to do the podcast for them. They're looking for people to save them, if you know what I mean. And I said, what if I just hosted your show? And he goes, oh, that would be awesome. And then it ran into the problem, well, but we need our name in it. We need our expertise. And I said, what if I co-hosted with you guys? All you have to do is show up. I do the rest. And they're like, oh, yeah. So that goes back to a great option. You know, if you got talent, you got producing talent, which I got to say, audio drama podcasters do. You've got a potential market where you could co-host shows for other people who need a little help. But that's something I'm working on too. And also, I have a lot of ideas, and that's the hard part is realizing all of them. But I'm thinking about a couple of extra shows that I wouldn't mind working on, but I'll keep you posted.